Innovation Minds presents At the Edge, a podcast about using innovation to empower and drive engagement. The nature of work has changed. Companies around the world are struggling to find the right balance in the new work-from-home hybrid paradigm. As much of the workforce begins to go back to the office after more than a year working remotely, how can leaders keep their employees engaged and collaborating successfully? In this podcast, we interview thought leaders from business and hear their stories and viewpoints on how to use innovation to engage the workforce, as well as how to innovate engagement.
A lot of companies, including ours, say that people are the most important asset. And if they are, then why wouldn't you talk to them? That is the work that we have to do. We've got to set the tone and set the environment so that the people who actually do handle the work and do the hard work, we're supporting them in getting that done. I don't think I've ever actually seen gold while I've been here. And is it different here? Yeah, it is different. But it's the same concept of making sure that your people know that they are important and that you actually spend a fair amount of time finding out what is going to work for them in order for them to do the work for all of us.
Awu Kwezonsaki is Regional Vice President of Human Resources for the Africa region at Newmont Mining. She has 40 years of experience in manufacturing, insurance, and mining industries, and holds a Bachelor of Law degree from the University of Ghana, as well as a Master of Laws, LLM, and Master of Business Administration from Temple University in Pennsylvania. So Awu, welcome to At the Edge, and thank you for, you know, getting on the recording with us. I understand you just a couple of days ago flew across the world from Ghana to Atlanta, so thank you for making time.
No, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
You are the head of HR for the African region of Newmont Mining.
Yes.
Right? Which is an international mining company based in the U.S., but with a big affiliate in Africa.
First of all, we like to call ourselves the largest gold mining company in the world. And we're headquartered in Denver. We operate out of four regions, North America, South America, Africa, and Australia. I'm the head of HR for the African region.
So how would you say that the issue of, you know, work and employee experience is different, or is it, between the different regions of the world?
So I think they're very different. We like to think of it in terms of the maturity journey that any employment environment is in. That's the case with just about everything that we deal with. So whatever the issue is, whether it's inclusion and diversity, whether it's employee experience, we have to consider that Australia is further ahead on the maturity level, culture, work environment, work things, than, let's say, the U.S., and that Africa and South America tend to be laggards in some areas. I think we tend to be a little bit advanced in other areas, but certainly when it comes to the work environment, the corporate environment, it is very, very different. The employee experience and expectations are somewhat similar, but how we go about dealing with them would be very different in the four different regions. I'll give you a recent example. When we went into lockdown for COVID and we had to have people go work from home, work remotely, somewhere along the way, when we realized that it was going to go longer than a month or two and we got out of the initial shock, we had to think about, okay, so what do we need to provide employees to be able to work comfortably from home? In Australia and the US, they were thinking in terms of ergonomics. You know, we need to get people ergonomically styled chairs. And for us here in Africa, the issue that we were dealing with mostly was bandwidth. Because once we sent people home, you know, in the office, we had, you know, broadband, we had VPN and all of that. And most people at home were using hotspots on their phone or didn't have sufficient data to do work. And that's a fundamental issue that the US doesn't have to deal with, but we had to deal with that here. So we see those kinds of things where we have to step back and say, what are the issues here? What are people dealing with? And they're fundamentally different.
It seems like America is just waking up to the idea that people are actually working in a company and that they're not just, you know, chess pieces or some kind of, you know, it seems like a really big awakening, which I suspect in Africa is not so new.
the culture, the work culture here can be, at least at Newmont, I'll speak for Newmont, pretty paternalistic. You know, on the other side of paternalism is entitlement. So when I got here, my feeling was that there's a whole lot of entitlement, and a lot of our employees don't think from a commercial standpoint. They think in terms of, well, what's the company going to do for me today? Which, by the way, is similar to what employees in the U.S. think, what's the company going to do for me today? But here, for example, we give employees every month, we give them a bar of soap, you know, a long bar of soap, a packet of detergent, mosquito spray, and mosquito repellent, because we want to make sure that they're able to keep things clean and able to abide by our value for, you know, keeping malaria out of the home. And at Christmas, we give people a Christmas hamper. And when I say hamper, I think picnic hampers. Is that kind of what comes to mind for you?
Well, because I'm both straddling America and Africa, yeah.
Okay.
Picnic hamper, but I do understand what you mean. But maybe explain for everybody.
So was I shocked when I realized I got to my house and I was told my Christmas hamper had been delivered? It was like 10 pounds of, not 10 pounds, more than that, sacks of rice and like 10 gallons of oil and 24 cans of mackerel. It was, you know, my first reaction was get this out of my house because it seemed like it was way too much. But that's the kind of thing that we provide that feeds into the employee experience here. And unfortunately, into the entitlement mentality that you wouldn't see happen very often in a U.S. corporate environment. And it's needed here because the level of poverty is extreme. The level of unemployment is high. So I can understand the rationale for many of the things that we do. But I also feel like it's important to be on a journey that would take all of us from entitlement towards a more commercial-minded mindset where we can help the business make business decisions.
You know, one of the big things that's happened because of COVID, but it's going to extend far beyond it, like forever, is the nature of this, you know, hybrid experiment, right? That hybrid work is now becoming the norm. In a mining company, there's people that are going to have to work in the mines. But other than that, how are you handling hybrid in locations like South America or Africa where you have bandwidth issues? Because without bandwidth, it's kind of hard to have hybrid work.
As a corporation in every region, we've decided that we will embrace hybrid working. And then we define it based on what each region can accommodate. So the mines never close. So the people who are operators and maintainers at the mines stay in the mines and they have their schedule and their shift. So when we talk about hybrid working, it's really the support staff at the mines, possibly, as well as the regional offices. So our office in Accra versus our mine sites at Achimanahafo, for example, or in South America, their regional offices in Miami, and their mine sites are in Chile, Argentina, and Peru. And same with the U.S., the regional office versus the mine sites. So when we looked at hybrid working for us, we actually combined the need to provide the opportunity for people to work remotely with the fact that we needed new office space. And so people actually want to work at home. We've had the office closed since March of 2020. We have never reopened it. What we've done is that people who want to come to the office to work or who need to come to the office to work because of bandwidth or because they're accessing applications that they can only do from the office, just let their functional leaders know and then they come into the office. But our plan going forward is to move to new office space, and we are intentionally setting that up so it doesn't accommodate all 140 or 120 regional employees. It can in a situation where everybody needs to come in. But we're setting it up with just 20 offices, and then everything else is open space. And each function will determine who comes into the office, knowing that we don't want more than 50% of the population in at any point in time. So there are some people who love working remotely. They get to be with their kids. They get to be a little bit more flexible in their schedule. They actually feel more productive being at home than they were in the office. You know, more power to them. And I think we can accommodate that. We might have a rule that every now and then, and each functional leader will decide what now and then means, you can come to the office. And then there'll be a cadre of people who probably will come to the office all the time because they need to work together in groups. So that's how we're accommodating it here. In Denver, for example, they have something similar. They opened up the office space and they have no assigned offices. So anybody who's coming in just books the time that they want to go in. So very similar, but you know, a little bit different based on where they are and their maturity versus where we are.
Now, I understand that you personally are actually taking on the effort to work entirely remotely from a different continent, running the African HR from the United States to see if that can work. Can you tell us more about that and how that would work and how others might use that model?
Yeah, so we'll find out whether it really works in the long term or not. But the Accra regional office is based in Accra, and I had moved out of Accra. I had moved to a town about 60 kilometers west of Accra called Winneba, my hometown. So I was working from Winneba. So at some point, it became clear to me that if I can work from Winneba, I can work from the U.S. What difference does it make? And I would, when I was in Winneba, I would go to Accra from time to time. But I realized that a couple of weeks would go by where I didn't go to Accra, and I would only go because. So I, you know, applied under the working remotely policy that we have, and both my bosses said, of course you can work from the U.S. So we have an arrangement now where I'll work remotely for a couple of months, and then I'll go back to Ghana for a couple of months and then come back here. So far, on day two, it's working pretty well. The only challenge we have with the whole hybrid working and working remotely are time zones. So if you think about, we're a global company, leadership is global. The mine sites don't have an issue with this. But when we need to get somebody on the same conference call or Zoom call, we use WebEx call, that is in Australia, Africa, and the US, and Denver is on the west side of the US, that's a problem because somebody has to be compromised in terms of their work hours. So it's something we're still wrestling with. So we'll see whether it works or not, but I think it's the way we need to consider the employee experience going forward and see how we can accommodate that. In addition, there are, we also realize, legal and immigration considerations that have to be taken into account. So we're looking at all of that and sort of wrestling through all of that.
Do you have any tips you picked up so far that you can suggest to listeners about how to make global hybrid work?
Stay involved. I mean, I stay in touch with my folks. Last March when I was here, we had an employee strike. So I just keep working. But somebody said, you're managing a strike from the US? And I said, oh, is that what I'm doing? It was kind of funny. I hadn't realized I was doing that. But yeah, I think the thing is to stay involved and to make sure that the team that you have is actually empowered to do the work and make decisions without you there. So I think I've gotten to that point where, at some point, whatever they decide in the heat of the moment has to be okay. Because if I'm trying to manage every single detail, then I should be over there. So I think part of it is just establishing the boundaries around what decisions people can make and then managing myself and my feelings about how something should have been done. To have it be done in an okay way, it takes some maturity on an individual's part and also some, I'll call it flexibility with people and managing my direct reports to make sure that they feel completely empowered and not afraid to move.
Do you see any things that are specific to Africa or other types of economies that can be offered to the employee experience in the more developed economies?
You know, I think something that I've become much more aware of working in Ghana the last 5 years that I probably wasn't. We talk about it in the U.S., but it's if I was going to put words around it, it's bringing the whole self to work. And I've become very aware of people's families and personal lives much more so than I was in the U.S. because people actually spend a fair amount of time together on a personal level. It's a much smaller community than I was used to in the U.S., put it that way. So, people's religion is really important here. People's not that it isn't in the US, it's just it takes on a much bigger dimension. And what people feel they need and what they need you for and how they hold you as somebody who can support and help them feels much bigger here than it did in the US. And I think it's made me consider my role to be one where I really, really have to take care of people. Like I really, really have to understand what their issues are and kind of deal with the whole person.
It seems like that's a big topic of conversation these days around how to make hybrid and remote work actually work, is that we need to take account of the whole human being in every employee.
So far, I was going to put it in terms of some of the languaging we use in HR today. I would say that they need to learn emotional intelligence. They need to learn to be empathetic. They need to, and it's something I've had to learn also, they need to ask about the person before they ask about the work, for example. You know, they need to care about the fact that when you're on a Zoom call, the two-year-old toddler comes to sit on their father's lap, or something you won't see in the US, a chicken's clucking in the background. You know, so, and include all of that and make sure that you're staying in tune with the fact that the cultures here are different. So there might be more people in the background or that the person has to take care of than there would be in a typical nuclear family in the US. Here in Ghana, for example, one of the statistics that's prevalent is that each person that's working takes care of 11 other people. And with the unemployment rates being as high as they are, you just know that your folks have obligations way beyond what they might have in the US in an environment that is much more difficult. We've just rolled out the COVID vaccine for employees because Ghana is one of those countries that has not had a wealth of vaccines. So we were able to get imported into Ghana a certain amount. And Newmont participated with the American Chamber of Commerce here in Ghana to get a supply. And we recognized that we couldn't just vaccinate our employees. We had to vaccinate our employees' dependents. And on top of that, we had to also vaccinate the household. Now, in the US, that would not have been so much of an issue. But again, if everybody who's working is taking care of 11 people or more, then we're bringing in the extended family, we're bringing in the people in the community that have regular contact with our employees. And so, you know, taking care of somebody who's an employee expands to include, you know, 11, 12 other people.
We have the great resignation, right? The whole idea that 40% of people are willing to leave their job rather than go back to the office full time in the United States. So it's just being forced on employers to really work in collaboration with employees rather than employees working for them in a sense. So how do we help them have this mind shift? How do we help them get the skills?
So I think it's the question is kind of like, who's in Grant's tomb? How do you teach people? You teach them. You have to start the conversation and actually really have the conversation about behaving in a certain way. And actually also letting people see what happens when you don't behave in that way. So we spent a fair amount of time in Newmont talking about the growth mindset, talking about different aspects of emotional intelligence, how to talk to employees, how to do performance evaluations. I know a lot of companies do that, but down to the level of what conversations to have in order to make that happen. Last year, I laughed a little bit because at the beginning of the lockdown, we sent out a communication to managers to say, you know, when you call your employees, you know, spend about 5 minutes asking about their family. So I would call my employee and I'd say, this is my 5 minutes asking about your family. Now, it's something that I normally have learned to do because of, again, working here gets very personal. But it's something that I think the answer is you just have to teach people and you just have to make it a subject, make it a topic of conversation. Because otherwise, it's people aren't visible. It's invisible to people.
Some of the other issues that would be interesting to talk about is, what does Africa and other parts of the world have to offer around the idea of how to engage employees more and actually get them happy to be working for the company? What have you learned in your time in Africa that would help people in, again, the developed economies that are learning to deal with hybrid work to be better at it?
I think the answer is probably the same everywhere, which is to ask the employees. So we just We talk a lot about speaking up. We talk a lot about getting employee input. Last year, 2020, we did a number of sort of spot surveys where we would send out a short survey for people to answer so we could find out what was going on for them, what their key issues were. We do that a lot. I think that's the only way to find out what it is that your employee population needs. And it's not so you give everything, but it's so you get a feel for what they're dealing with so that you can actually help them with what they're dealing with. And that spans every issue. I mean, we didn't have as much as Australia had. We had a little spurt in mental health issues during 2020, a little spurt. But here we're still dealing with the stigma of it and the lack of information around it and how people view any kind of mental illness. And so we've done a lot in terms of just basic education. You know, that's another area where we are at the beginning of the maturity curve than other economies might be. But we need to spend time on that. And part of it is asking employees, talking to them. And then when we see a situation where we can intervene, actually doing what's needed with the individual, but doing as much as we can publicly around the issue, not around the individual, but around the issue that individual faced, so that other people, especially the work group that the person's in, are aware that these things come up and how important they are for us to deal with in a certain way. So it's just constant conversation, constant education.
What would you say to, you know, companies, employers who are like, there's enough work to do, I don't need to be having this constant conversation?
That is the work. You know, a lot of companies, including ours, say that people are the most important asset. And if they are, then why wouldn't you talk to them? So, you know, I'm saying this because I'm in HR for sure, but I'm also saying this because as a, you know, a senior manager in a company, that is the work that we have to do. We've got to set the tone and set the environment so that the people who are working, who are actually, you know, I don't do gold. I don't think I've ever actually seen gold while I've been here. The people who actually do handle the work and do the hard work so that we're supporting them in getting that done. And is it different here? Yeah, it is different. It's different at every so many levels, but it's the same concept of making sure that your people know that they are important and that you actually spend a fair amount of time finding out what is going to work for them in order for them to do the work for all of us.
It's interesting the metaphor there of you work for the largest gold mining company in the world and you never saw any gold. I think that's another interesting metaphor for hybrid work, right? The work doesn't always have to happen in one place. How does that transform our understanding of what work actually is?
You know, we're still learning how it transforms how we understand work or how we understand performance and how we value people. We're all on that journey right now. And remember, I said earlier that the people who are actually digging up the ground and sifting through the dirt and processing the ore, they can't work in a hybrid fashion. They're tied to the ground. So there's an element where those of us who are able to work remotely need to understand that we're not any better or worse off than the people who are working in the mine. We can work remotely, but we've still got to produce. And the people who are working the mine need to not see those of us who are working remotely as having some advantage, given that they are actually the producers. So we're still on the journey of how we do that. We're still building our intelligence around that. I don't know where it's going to end up, but it's not going back to where it used to be, for sure. We know too much, and we cannot unlearn what we've learned over the 18 months.
So I think what I'm hearing here that's a really interesting point that I'd like you to talk a little more about is, how do the people who have to be in the central location and the people that don't, how do we get them to really learn to support each other in the challenges that they each face, given that the challenges are, you know, so different?
I think it's hard because unless I can put myself in your shoes and you put yourself in mine, you won't ever know what it's like for me to to be in my job doing what I do, and you might think I've got the easier job. So again, we haven't done much other than through our, we have what we call business resource groups here, Women and Allies, and then we have a group that handles our indigenous population. We call them the local locals because they're local to the communities that we mine in, and they're, you know, they're local people who are local to the communities. And we try to use them to bring the outside in and also to take the inside out, to kind of educate people about what it's like from different perspectives. That, and I think that's what it is, right? We just need to have people be open to understanding that there is a different perspective. No better, no worse. But it does take something to be a support person working in an office, working remotely. And it does take something to be an operator or maintainer working in the mine. And it does take something to be a woman working in a mine. Whew. It does take something to be a local working at the mine site, but being part of the community. All have different challenges. And we just need to talk about those challenges so that people start to understand and be able to be empathetic about each other's challenges and situation.
If you had to, you know, look at your collective wisdom as someone who's worked in various parts of the world as an HR expert, you know, in a large company, you know, the new way of working.
The biggest learning and the thing that most of us probably don't do that well is to listen, right? Is to listen. Listen to what the people are saying about their situation. And, you know, I do a lot of like taking notes to self, you know, somebody says something, it's like, okay, it may not be relevant to what I'm doing now, but note to self, it's going to come up as relevant later. So really just listening and you know, seeking to understand what that person is trying to tell you. You know, for the first time in my career, I have employees calling me on my personal line. So working remotely also enables that to happen, right? So I have an office phone that's tied to my home phone, but people just call and they want to chat about what's going on with them or interest them enough to find out what's going on with me. I think that's great. I don't think I've ever had in my career a situation where employees would just call me. And I view that as a gift in some respects, right? I'm really glad that they do that. They may want something, but that doesn't matter. The fact that they call gives me an opportunity to listen to what they're saying and to see what it is that I can provide or put into the next policy or whatever it is from an HR standpoint.
As much as everybody wants to get a lot done, it seems the key right now is to kind of slow down, pay more attention.
Pay more attention. You said it. And probably to pay attention, you have to slow down, right? You have to like focus for at least a minute. But I think it's that, it's listening and paying attention to, and whatever is important for what you're doing will actually come through what you're hearing other people talk about.
What would be what's the word or the concept for 2022?
For 2020, if it was pivot, yeah, we were constantly pivoting for 2020. 2021 has been adjusting to the fact that there's not a new normal and we're not going back. I think 2022 is going to be sort of settling in. We weren't quite sure in 2021. So we've got a lot of tentacles, a lot of seeds, green shoots. I think 2022 is going to be about, okay, we've got to settle into some level of stability where people can actually have some certainty for longer than a minute. So I think it's going to be that. I think it's going to be trying to get some foundational things laid and stable to give people more certainty.
Any more tips of what people can start doing in the coming months to start creating a sense of certainty for themselves?
I think the key thing is to look and see what you can make certain. So we are finalizing some projects that I think will help to do that in certain areas. And once we communicate that to employees, I think it starts us off in the new year with a new base. And I'm really thrilled that we're able to do that so that we start from there. And then start to listen again newly and pay attention to what it is that's needed next. You know, again, I'm not saying that we listen and pay attention in order to provide everything that people say they want, but it is to actually get what the new direction needs to be or what the constant direction needs to be. So I think, you know, finalizing whatever we've done for 2021 and then looking to see what are the green shoots that we want to take hold of in order to further the action in 2022.
So Abu, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us and bring us your wisdom. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been At the Edge, a podcast from Innovation Minds. We look forward to hosting you on our next episode, which you can find through the same channel you got here with today. Please join our LinkedIn group where you can discuss every episode. You can find the link in the show notes. We're really glad you were here, and thank you very much from Innovation Minds.